And now, it's time for our weekly news round. Lutheran Radio News with Paul Hill.
Lutheran Radio UK held a service of dedication for its new studio, which is broadcasting 24/7 from its new home at Resurrection Lutheran Church in Cambridge. While listeners may not notice any difference, be assured you are receiving God's message from a seriously state-of-the-art studio, which even the BBC might be tempted to covet. The dedication service was well attended and led by LRUK's own manager, Pastor Jamie Krieger, with the sermon being delivered by the chairman of the Evangelical Lutheran Church of England, Pastor John Ehlers. Tell your friends about Lutheran Radio UK. It's all about Christ and to God's children. The ELCE Congregational Life Committee announced that they have arranged a Congregational Life Conference on Saturday, the 21st of May 2016, to be held at the Resurrection Lutheran Church in Cambridge. Do not miss this opportunity to hear keynote speakers, the Reverend Dr. Robert Kolb, Lutheran author and scholar from Concordia St. Louis, and the Reverend Gregory Seltz, presenter of the Lutheran Hour, speaking on the theme, My Church is Built On. Registration will be at 9:45 a.m. Please try to come along and meet these great speakers and find out what your own church is built on. On the 13th and 14th of April, representatives of the Nordic Missions Diocese began church fellowship talks with the SELC, Independent Evangelical Lutheran Church of Germany, and the ELCE in Helsinki, Finland. The Nordic Lutheran Diocese formed its constitution in 2015 and is composed of the Evangelical Lutheran Missions Diocese of Finland, the Mission Province of Sweden, and the Evangelical Lutheran Diocese in Norway. These three churches have attempted to operate within the confines of their respective national church bodies, but have increasingly come into conflict with them as the national churches have become increasingly liberal. The bishops and almost all the clergy associated with the diocese have been defrocked by the national church bodies for their confessional stance. Planning for these talks has taken 3 years and was first only envisioned to include the ELCE and the Mission Diocese of Finland. But as discussions progressed, it was considered prudent to include the other three church bodies so that the scope and breadth of these talks could be increased. The discussions were held at the Koinonia Centre of the Mission Diocese Finland in Helsinki. The meetings began with worship, and discussions soon followed on the nature and identity of the church. Each church body presented their constitution and spoke about how the Lutheran confession shaped their self-understanding and ecclesiastical identities. Despite the influence of national and historic influences on the wording and structures of their constitutions, it was agreed that a clear and common understanding founded upon the Lutheran confessions existed between these churches. Definition of free and independent churches were discussed and clarified, and the Nordic diocese made it clear that they were independent of all national church structures, governance and practices. The two-day conference discussed 12 other topics, including the doctrine of Holy Scripture, the Holy Trinity, the person and work of the Son of God, the person and work of the Holy Spirit, justification and sanctification, the end times, and how they relate to other churches, both inside and outside Lutheranism. It was agreed these discussions were very helpful and that there was a substantial amount of agreement on these doctrines among all five participants. The area that garnered most discussion was on the subjects of the church and church structure. The Nordic Mission Diocese and the SELC are episcopal, meaning they have bishops and a more centralized church structure, whereas the ELCE is more congregational and does not have a bishop. These discussions then led into further talks about the office of the Holy Ministry. Again, all participants agreed these were very fruitful discussions and they gave insights into our practices and the reasons we do things as we do. It was agreed that the particular form and structure of a church is important, but what is ultimately important is how that structure assists the church to proclaim the gospel and administer the sacraments as she carries out Christ's mission in this world. The participants are currently working on a joint statement of agreement, which they hope to publish by the end of April. This statement will emphasize the positive aspects of their agreement on doctrine and stress its scriptural and confessional basis. Each church will then take this agreement back to their church for consideration and consultation. Muslim prison chaplains have routinely distributed Islamist literature, according to a leaked report. A review which started in September, commissioned by Justice Secretary Michael Gove, found extremist pamphlets and CDs in more than 10 jails in November, according to The Times. The material included homophobic and misogynist sentiments and encouraged the murder of apostates, Muslims who leave or reject the religion. The report on what was found has not yet been cleared for publication. It is said to have concluded that many Muslim prison chaplains were under-equipped for counter-radicalization work, sometimes because they lacked the capability, but often because they didn't have the will. Prisoners at more than one jail were encouraged by chaplains to fundraise for Islamic charities that had links to terrorism, according to the report, which warned that tax controls and senior-level failings had allowed the problems to occur. The Times reported that jails in England and Wales held 12,328 Muslim inmates at the start of 2016. Convicted terrorists numbered 131, and a further 1,000 were deemed vulnerable to radicalisation. Muslims make up 4.8% of the population, but 14.5% of prisoners. About 100 Muslim chaplains appointed through a process overseen by Atsam Ali, the prison service's Muslim advisor, are employed full-time in jails on salaries of up to £40,000. Mississippi Governor Phil Bryant signed a gun rights bill on Friday, allowing churches to create security programs designating members to carry firearms to defend worshippers against violence. The legislation, called the Mississippi Church Protection Act, also makes it easier for residents in other settings to carry concealed weapons, drawing criticism from national gun control advocates. It was passed amid heightened concerns about church security after a gunman last June killed 9 black worshippers during a Bible study session at a church in Charleston, South Carolina, an attack that authorities say was racially motivated. Churches deserve protection from those who would harm worshippers, said Bryant, a Republican, in a Twitter post explaining his decision to sign the measure into law. In most states, churches could address security concerns with similar programs without the need for a new law, according to Amy Hunter, a spokeswoman for the National Rifle Association Gun Rights Lobbying Group, which supported the measure providing civil liability immunity. The legislation also allows Mississippi residents eligible to own a gun to carry a firearm in holsters without a permit, she said, expanding on a state law enacted last year, allowing for similar access in purses, bags, and briefcases. However, gun control proponents called the law dangerous. Mississippi law enforcement, families, and faith leaders all spoke out against this reckless bill that will allow dangerous people to carry hidden loaded handguns in public without a permit, said Shirley Hopkins Davis, a volunteer with the Mississippi chapter of Mums Demand Action for Gun Sense in America, in a statement. Participants carry firearms for church security programs, must have safety training, and meet permitting standards. Meantime, the governor of Tennessee vetoed legislation on Thursday that would have made the Christian Bible the state's official book, saying it would violate the U.S. Constitution, but lawmakers vowed to hold a vote to overrule his decision. In a letter notifying top state lawmakers of his intent to veto the legislation, Governor Bill Haslam, himself a Christian, said the proposal violated religious freedoms enshrined in both the U.S. Constitution and the Tennessee Constitution. My personal feeling is that this bill trivializes the Bible, which I believe is sacred text, Haslam, a Republican, wrote. The veto comes a week after the state Senate vowed to make the Bible the state's official book. That vote followed the state House's approval last year. Haslam, who won re-election in 2014, faced mounting pressure from civil libertarian and non-theistic groups to stop the measure from becoming law. Heidi Weinberg, executive director of the American Civil Liberties Union of Tennessee, praised the decision, saying elected officials should not use their official positions to favor one religious belief over another. Had Haslam signed the bill, Tennessee would have become the first U.S. state to designate the Bible as its official state book. The lawmakers who sponsored the measure vowed to hold a vote that would overrule Haslam's veto. A simple majority in each legislative chamber would overrule his decision. According to polling, 62% of all Tennesseans favor making the Holy Bible the state book in order to recognize its significance from a historical, economic, and cultural standpoint, the House sponsor, Representative Jerry Sexton, said. Senator Steve Sutherland and I are prepared to move forward with the veto override, and we plan to do exactly that. Holy Land is the world's first religious theme park where you can watch the Son of God rise and experience dozens of Bible-themed attractions, including a real ark. Disneyland has Mickey and Minnie, the Wizarding World of Harry Potter has, well, Harry Potter, and the Holy Land has Jesus Christ. Yes, that's right, Holy Land, the world's first religious theme park where you can watch the Son of God rise more regularly than the actual sun, and where there are dozens of Bible-themed attractions. As well as churches, there's also a mosque and a synagogue, and life-size statues of leading religious figures, including Mother Teresa and Pope John Paul II. There is even a depiction of the crucifixion. There is a 20-minute show called Genesis, where an animatronic Adam and Eve and a Noah's Ark full of animals tell the story of the creation of the universe. It's not all Christianity, as there's a place for Judaism and Islam in the inclusive atmosphere in Buenos Aires, Argentina. Dubbed Christianity's answer to Disney World, the park opened 15 years ago when Jorge Mario Bergoglio, now Pope Francis, the first Latin American pontiff, was the local archbishop. Tierra Santa is dedicated to the key moments in the life of Christ and is the first religious theme park in Latin America. Among the Bible-themed attractions are a miniature model of the Last Supper and a giant Jesus. But the highlight apparently is the resurrection, where hundreds of visitors watch a 12-meter-high statue of Jesus rise to a soundtrack by Handel from behind a tall rock. The rather tatty-looking statue makes a brief blinking appearance, crosses itself as the chorus of Hallelujah rings out. On its website, the theme park bosses boast the Ark, Workshop of Galilee, the Carpentry of Joseph, and the House of Puppetry are ideal choices for kids. There are life-size statues of the Holy Family at the theme park, which draws visitors from across Argentina, Uruguay, Brazil, Chile, Paraguay, and Bolivia. You can also visit the Creation, the Nativity, the Last Supper, and the Resurrection, with notable performances of the Wailing Wall, the Roman Palace, and the Virgin Cave. However, not everyone is a fan, with Lonely Planet saying, "Even respectful, devout Catholics will find this, the world's first religious theme park, a very tacky place." An Islamist group in Indonesia has, in front of the local police commander, sealed off a brand new church, torn down its sign, and demanded that the local mayor cancel its permit. The Santa Clara Church in Bekasi, a heavily populated community city to the east of the capital Jakarta, only opened on the 7th of March. The Islamic Forum Community, the FUI, and other Islamist organizations have been protesting since the church obtained its permit in July 2015, claiming its leaders had used false identity cards to get it. The Asian Human Rights Commission, the AHRC, has started an appeal on the church's behalf and asked for supporters to send letters to 10 top Indonesian leaders, including the president. The AHRC added that it will write a separate letter to the UN Special Rapporteur on freedom of religion or belief. The AHRC noted that the local law enforcement agencies failed to intervene on the church's behalf, leaving the congregants in fear and uncertainty. The FUI complained that the church had been built in a community where the majority are Muslims and where Islamic boarding schools also exist. However, the Bekasi mayor refused to annul the church's permit, saying it had fulfilled all the legal requirements necessary for construction. Indonesia's Minister of Religion supported the mayor's decision. Despite this, the law enforcement agencies have failed to protect the Santa Clara Church congregants. In fact, it seems the agencies have no will or policy to enforce the law against vigilantes. As a result, the church congregation lives under pressure and intimidation, wrote the AHRC in its letter of appeal. The AHRC called upon the local police to take a strong stance against the FUI and ensure that the government guarantees protection to the Santa Clara congregation to practice their religion. Furthermore, the government should revise the law on the establishment of worship places without any discrimination amongst the various religions and beliefs that exist in Indonesia, the letter concluded. In the last decade, the existence of intolerant vigilante groups has become a serious problem in Indonesia, wrote the AHRC in its letter to supporters. More importantly, the country's law enforcement does not seem to be willing or committed to enforcing the law against such groups. Despite their actions being in violation of the right to freedom of religion and belief, guaranteed in the 1945 Indonesian Constitution. Article 29, paragraph 2 requires the state to ensure the freedom of every citizen to choose their own religion and to worship according to their religion and belief itself. Indonesia is number 43 on the 2016 Open Doors World Watch list, which ranks the 50 countries where it's most difficult to be a Christian. And finally, the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster held the world's first legally recognized marriage in New Zealand on Saturday, with the Offbeat Movement hailing it as a milestone towards acceptance as a real religion. Church adherents call themselves Pastafarians, wear colanders on their heads, revere pirates, and believe the world was created by a giant deity made of spaghetti. But while they do have a love of pasta-based puns and celebrate holidays such as Talk Like a Pirate Day, followers insist their religion is no joke. New Zealand officials agree, giving Wellington-based Pastafarian Karen Martin the legal right to conduct marriages last month after ruling the church was based on genuine philosophical convictions. Martin conducted her inaugural wedding as an ordained ministeroni on Saturday when Toby Ricketts and Mariana Young became the first couple in the world to tie the noodly knot in a legally recognised ceremony. "It's a formal recognition that we are a church, and that's just great," she told AFP ahead of the ceremony. She said many more weddings were planned, including same-sex unions, which were legalised in New Zealand in 2013. "I've had people from Russia, from Germany, Denmark, from all over contacting me and wanting me to marry them in the church because of our non-discriminatory philosophy. We will marry any consenting legal adults who meet the legal requirement." The wedding took place on a chartered vessel decorated as a pirate ship in the South Island town of Akaroa, with guests dressed in costume. Ricketts, a filmmaker who discovered Pastafarianism while making a documentary about religion, said he knew some people may not take the marriage seriously. "That's kind of what attracted us to it," he told AFP. "We were never planning to get married and we have a conventional wedding, but this allowed us to do it in a way where we're comfortable. Our families are 100% behind us." Pastafarianism appeared in a 2005 open letter written by Bobby Henderson to the Kansas Board of Education in protest over its decision to teach intelligent design in schools. Henderson, 36, a self-described hammock enthusiast and computer nerd from Oregon, is regarded as the prophet of the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster, the FSM. He argued that believing a pastor god made the universe was no less valid than intelligent design, a form of creationism promoted by Christian fundamentalists, as both theories had no scientific merit. Since then, it has gained popularity, and Henderson's website, Veganza, details members' activities ranging from public parades to campaigns for the right to wear colanders on driving license photographs. "New Zealand is one of the few places that has formally recognised us," he told AFP via email. Not all are happy with the decision, including Professor Peter Lynham, a religious history specialist at New Zealand's Massey University. "I'm not at all convinced there is a genuine statement of values in the church," he told Fairfax New Zealand when the original decision was handed down. "I know some people who think the force is rather more meaningful than a spaghetti monster," he added, saying FSM was essentially a satirical body that mocked religion. Martin disputed the view and said a strong belief system underpinned FSM. "We are anti-discrimination on any basis for any reason, and we truly believe there should be a complete separation of church and state," she said. "We believe in challenging ourselves and other religions and challenging cultural superstitions. We're very serious about our beliefs." She said there was a major distinction between a joke church and a church that can take a joke and laugh at itself, such as the FSM. "Laughter is the best medicine and it makes life much better and maximizes our happiness," she said. My name is Paul Hill. Thank you for listening to Lutheran Radio UK. Lutheran Radio News will be back next Friday. Until then, every blessing to you and goodbye for now.
On your PC, tablet, mobile phone and internet radio receiver, this is Lutheran Radio UK.